Welcome to Cannabis Business Minds Podcast with your host, Simone Samaluka-Radzins. Join me where I'll take you inside the ins and outs of this brand new and exciting business called cannabis. Connect with me on Calligia.com and follow us on social media as well. And here's today's show.
Dan, I'm really happy to have you on the show. You know, I'm happy how fast we enacted this like interview versus happy hour. You bring a wealth of knowledge to the cannabis industry, especially to a lot of startups and entrepreneurs. One of the biggest issues that startups face and entrepreneurs, I've even faced it myself, is how do you actually do funding? You know, not necessarily how do you find capital, which is a big thing in itself, but how do you make sure that you're protecting yourself, that you're protecting your vision, that you're protecting everything that you worked really hard to get when you're seeking investment? And so I wanted to have you on today's show to talk about, you know, startups, valuation, investing. And before we get too much into that, I think people need to know who you are and, you know, how you got here to Cannabis Business Minds. I know that you're a director at Ello, a very large firm in Los Angeles. I know that your background is, you have a CFA, you know, I think you have multiple degrees, but please share with us a little bit about who you are before we get started.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Simone. So my background is in finance. I come from the Midwest and I worked in investment banking in Chicago for a number of years in the healthcare industry, doing mergers and acquisitions in the hospital provider space. So I did over $1 billion of deals, buying and selling hospitals, outpatient surgery centers, imaging facilities, et cetera. And I learned a lot from that, pretty similar to cannabis, actually, a lot of local state regulations, issues of federal regulations, things were changing constantly. So it was a very challenging environment. And then 3 years ago, I made the jump over to cannabis. And it was a huge opportunity. I saw it was just, you know, for everyone involved, I think most people would say it is a once in a lifetime opportunity that just got me so excited. I just couldn't pass it up. And so in the last 3 years, I've done a variety of things. I joined a company called MJIC. And at the start, we were an investment company. So I advised them on, you know, investments in a range of different companies in the space, everything from plant touching to ancillary, from pre-revenue to, you know, some of the larger, more established companies. I also started a cannabis stock index called the Marijuana Index. You can go to marijuanaindex.com to see it. And it basically just tracks cannabis stocks, both in the US and Canada, which, you know, as many people know, has been a very hot topic over the last couple of years as stock prices have gone up drastically. And a lot of companies see that as an opportunity for them to liquidize their investment and really, you know, take part in the gains that people are seeing. And in the meantime, I've also been doing a lot of financial advisory work. So over the last 3 years in the cannabis space, I've advised hundreds of cannabis companies on raising capital, on working with investors, valuing their business, mergers and acquisitions, among other things. And so I joined Ello at the start of this year. And since then, we've been focused on, you know, building out our capital markets team. You know, Ello is a professional services firm that advises cannabis companies on everything from, you know, tax to accounting, outsourced CFO services, auditing, and investment banking, which is what I'm working on.
Wow, you are busy.
Yep.
You are busy. And since you've been in this space, so you've been in it for 3 years, you've, you know, now you're kind of experiencing this transition as it is in California from an unregulated market to a regulated market, but you're also focused heavily, I think, in many places in the United States, if not the world. What's one common theme that you're seeing amongst your business operators that you're helping, whether they're smaller or, you know, pre-revenue or they're actually existing, as it relates to what they think, you know, about raising money?
You know, I think the biggest change I've seen in the last 3 years is the increase in professionalism. You know, when I joined 3 years ago, it was still very much a black market industry, except for a couple markets. You know, it was a lot easier to raise capital without having a well thought out business plan. You know, it was a much different environment than it is today. You know, today it is a much more established industry. It's a lot more competitive, more saturated. You know, if you're seeking to raise money, you really need to have thought through everything about your business plan and how the business is going to work, and, you know, be ready to answer those questions from investors, because, you know, every day that this industry goes by, it gets harder and harder, and for good reason. I mean, it's becoming a real industry, just like any other competitive industry in America.
Yeah. I mean, you and I do very similar things. And so I take on startups. I try to teach them like these basic principles and go through this business accelerator to get kind of funding and ready. And I can't emphasize how important it is to really understand what a business plan is. I think that a lot of people think that it's a template that they can get, something that they can buy, but you know, more than 90% of startups fail in any industry. Operating in the cannabis industry is so much more difficult. Can you talk about key elements that should be in a business plan that you've seen that actually have been able to get funding?
Sure. And I agree with you. A business plan is very important. It's actually more important internally to understand your own business, to make sure you've thought through all the different elements of how you're going to start and run your business. It's more important for that purpose than it is for investors. Frankly, most investors nowadays, they don't want to read an 80-page business plan. It's not necessary to hire someone to put that together unless you want help thinking through it yourself. So when it comes to a business plan, I mean, there's a number of elements that go into it. You know, the most important is, what is your product? What is your service? What problem are you trying to solve? You know, for some companies, it's much easier. If you're trying to build a brand, what's your demographic? What's your target? How are you going to sell your product? Right? Or if it's, you know, any other type of product, you know, they all have a different problem they're trying to solve. Yeah. So trying to communicate that, and how is that better than what's currently in the market, whether it's cheaper or more efficient or focused on a different demographic, you know, that's the most important part of a business plan.
Oh my gosh. Yes, 100%. And I think what's challenging for me sometimes is working with clients who think that the problem that they're solving is that they sell cannabis. And it's like, no, you have to sell, like, you can't just sell cannabis. Like, you have to figure out if it's what exact problem in the cannabis supply chain that you're solving.
Absolutely. And even with brands, right, is this is becoming a CPG industry, right? Where, you know, there are dozens of different types of consumers, everything from, you know, young millennials that are making, you know, pretty good money, that have their own attitudes and they like the craft brand, versus, you know, the older demographic that, you know, is a little weary of cannabis. Maybe they don't want to smoke flower. They want something that's more respectable, right? That's easier to digest. It doesn't smell like cannabis. You know, every different demographic has a different need. And as this industry evolves, different products will focus on those needs. If you try to meet everybody, you're going to lose.
Yeah, 100%. And so I don't know, because there's a lot of confidentiality as it relates to being a professional advisor into cannabis. But I'm curious, can you talk about any of the interesting deals that either you've read about or that you've seen that have been so different, something that you didn't expect? For me coming, and I can preface it by saying, for me coming from like international consulting, you know, I've taken companies public. I had never heard of a reverse merger before, right? And then I'm like, oh, the cannabis industry has all these reverse mergers. What's that mean? You know, so for you, what was coming from your healthcare and your investment banking background and being here for 3 years, what's the most interesting, I guess, transaction or deal that you've read about or seen?
Oh man, that's interesting. I mean, I've seen a lot of very interesting technologies. It's amazing, because when you think about cannabis, people think of it as an industry, but it's really almost a dozen different industries in one, right? Yes. Everything from cultivation, even within manufacturing, there's so many different types of products and extraction technologies. There's retail, there's delivery, there's testing. And the ancillary space is estimated to be 3 times the size of the plant touching space. So there are dozens of different industry verticals. It is much more than just a cannabis industry. So when I think about all the deals I've seen, there's a lot. You know, I definitely think, you know, I've worked with one company that wants to build a national flower brand targeted at millennials that are higher income, that's edgy and very well branded. And I think that's just an amazing product that I've seen. You know, working with them to develop that has been very insightful, because, you know, in the next 5-10 years, once this, you know, gradually progresses at the federal level, there will be national brands and they will be focused on different consumers. And so trying to build out, you know, what is the next great product for a certain brand is so fascinating to me.
Right? Because a lot of it's still so unknown, right? We can't, I mean, you can predict other markets and trends that have legalized, but we still have no idea what this, what a national cannabis brand will even be.
No, we don't.
No, and hopefully soon we will. You know, and that's actually a perfect segue into just cannabis legalization and Canada. So you have this index, you focus on Canada, you focus on the United States, and I also think a little bit internationally. What are your thoughts on cannabis legalization in upcoming, I think, what is it, in October?
Yeah, October 17th.
Yeah.
You know, it's remarkable, right? It's going to be the first G7 country to legalize cannabis, and it's going to change the world. You know, there have already been a couple other countries that have gone that route, but are so small, it's pretty minimal in terms of their impact. You know, Canada's really drawing a spotlight from around the world. We've seen it a lot over the last couple of years, ever since Justin Trudeau was elected. It's really drawn a focus to Canada. You know, if you look at just the capital flows, that tells the story in and of itself. The companies in Canada have raised amazing amounts of money, unthinkable even a couple of years ago. We're talking billions and billions, way surpassing their US counterparts.
Yeah.
And most of that capital is raised internationally. It's not in Canada, it's not in the US, it's all over the world. People see what's happening in Canada and they want to get in, and they see Canada as the first true federally legal market, whereas the US is still scary to some investors. I mean, if you're a big time investor with significant capital and, you know, restrictions on how to invest that capital, you're going to be cautious about putting it into a federally illegal substance, which is why even some of the big, you know, alcohol companies that are starting to get into the space are partnering with Canadian companies. The biggest one was Constellation just announced yesterday, they're increasing their investment into Canopy by another $5 billion. Canopy is now going to have more capital than any other cannabis company in Canada combined.
So
the capital flows are remarkable.
And just the sheer amount of volume and the sheer amount of just like deal size, it's just, and valuations, like these valuations. And so I do want to take it back, because there are a lot of entrepreneurs that, and we wanted to talk about valuation. Can you explain to some of these listeners, like what does valuation even mean? Like from a very, you know, taking that step back, forgetting that we're not both finance experts, what does a company's valuation mean for an entrepreneur?
Well,
loaded question.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, there's the theoretical, but in all reality, valuation is what an investor is willing to pay to buy a stake in your business, right? So you can go around saying whatever you want your value is, but at the end of the day, it is what investors will invest in your company at. And so it ranges a lot. I mean, when it comes to pre-revenue companies, I've seen everything from, you know, a $1 million valuation all the way up to a $20 million valuation. It really varies a lot depending on the team, the opportunity, the sector. You know, it's a challenging climate in the cannabis space, because there's very little history. There's so much uncertainty that trying to value a business, it's, you know, it's art and science. It's a very challenging endeavor, especially for pre-revenue companies. You know, that's why it's good to think through, talk with experts that understand the space, that have been involved in transactions in the space, to understand what are investors demanding, and also just tailoring your pitch to make sure you're attracting the right capital and you're answering questions appropriately. You know, there's a lot of different ways to conduct valuations in the cannabis space. You know,
go see Dan. Like, you are the man. I'm like, I like a huge plug. Please go see him. You did my valuation. Like, he's an expert. You know, work with him and his company, because I don't know anybody else who I could recommend. Honestly, like, I mean, you know so much about the market, and especially in the cannabis space. You were mentioning this, like when we were kind of doing our pre-interview, I suppose, for the podcast, like it's very important to know comparables of in this space, and not many people understand those comparables.
Yeah, and comparables are tough. You know, I think at its most basic element, the two most common forms of valuation are cash flow and market. And so cash flow is the most theoretical form of valuation. It says, you know, you project out your future cash flows. The value of your business today is the sum of all future cash flows discounted back to present value. That theoretically is the best way to understand valuation, is what are the future cash flows your business will produce, but it's very difficult to project what future cash flows will be. even more than a year out, it can be almost impossible for an early stage company. That's why generally you'll take a cash flow approach and then a market approach. And the market approach is just looking at what are other companies in the market valued at? And there's a couple of different ways you can do that. You can look at what large public companies are valued at, but that, you know, those companies are huge and big operations, well-established. So if you're a small company, it's very unlikely you're going to find a public company that's relevant.
Yeah.
But you can also look at what are other M&A transactions? What are companies that are similar to your business that have been acquired or have raised capital? What have they been valued at? But the difficult thing there is that most of those are private. So you don't have access to those unless you're actively involved in transactions in the market, following the market. And what makes it even more difficult is, as we said earlier, you know, cannabis is all these different sectors, right? And every state is different. So a retail store in Colorado is worth a lot less or a lot different than a retail store in California. And even retail stores in California, you know, a store on Abbot Kinney in downtown Venice is worth a lot less than a store in rural Oregon, right? So the market matters so much. And so looking at comparables, it's exhausting. It's a lot of work, but you know, it helps to take, you know, multiple approaches to try to assess that. And that's really relevant if you're already operating and producing revenue. If you're pre-revenue, it's very difficult. I mean, there's really not a lot of science behind pre-revenue. You know, there is, and there's ways to think about it, and you can look at what investors are investing at. It's more challenging for sure.
Yeah. I just read an article yesterday about, you know, that venture capitalists, not probably doing your seed round, but venture capitalists are like maybe a few years ago, it was very hard to invest in something that was like, let's say $300 million or like that type of a raise. And there's this article about now how companies that are like more ancillary companies, like outsourced, you know, accounting companies are getting crazy valuations. My question to you is, what's been the biggest valuation that you've seen in the cannabis industry? And how does that compare to any other industry?
Yeah, so, you know, the biggest valuations for sure are up in Canada. Without a doubt. I mean, a lot of those public Canadian companies are trading at, you know, 100 times revenue, which is just outrageous. I mean, in established industries, companies generally trade based on EBITDA, which is the same thing as profit, more or less. It's EBITDA is basically cash flow. You know, you'll see, like, when I used to do healthcare deals, depending on the type of business, it would range from, you know, 5 times EBITDA to maybe up to 15 times EBITDA. So maybe an average of like 7 or 8 or 10. That's times cash flow, right? Your net cash flow after expenses. Compare that to, you know, these Canadian companies that are trading at 100 times revenue. You know, that's all based on their future growth. A lot of people think they're way overvalued. No one really knows. I mean, a lot of the valuation for those companies is based on their international opportunities.
Yeah.
The companies in Canada are exporting all around the world. You know, they're going to start dipping their toes in the US once it's federally legal here. So they do have a lot of growth opportunities, but, you know, I would say in the US for existing operators, I generally see valuations ranging from around 1 times revenue, maybe a little below 1 times revenue, all the way up to 10 times revenue. And it just depends, you know, which sector of the business are you in? You know, revenue, you know, multiples for cultivation and retail are generally lower than like for manufacturing and product companies. It does depend on what stage you are, right? If you're very small and you're doubling your growth every few months, you're going to have a much higher valuation. The biggest valuations for sure are the large multi-state vertically integrated companies. You know, the Green Thumbs, MedMen, MPX, Acreage Holdings. You know, these companies that operate in multiple states across the supply chain, you know, they're generally trading, you know, north of 5 times revenue.
Yeah. Oh, that's so fascinating. What kind of, and one more question than the speed round. Everybody always wants to get something out of this podcast. And I think they've gotten a lot from just even hearing you about valuations and all of that. What's, you know, what's one thing, what's the biggest myth about investing in the cannabis industry that you could try to dispel today?
The biggest myth. Huh. It's a good question. Probably, you know, I think people have a difficult time understanding the challenges of raising capital. You know, it's really, I think going back to the business plan discussion we had is mm-hmm. it's really understanding your business and having a good plan for your business. I work with a lot of companies that are established companies with strong operations that don't have a strong plan in place. And they're trying to raise money. And, you know, for a lot of them, it's their first time raising money. And so this mm-hmm. is new to them. So, you know, they're not familiar with traditional business principles for raising capital. But I cannot stress the importance enough of having financial projections and a business plan, at least conceptually, to understand your business.
Yeah.
To use that to raise capital, because you need to understand where your business is going. If you're doing multiple things, you know, what's your projected cash flow? If you're trying to raise money, how are you going to use that money, right? If you want to raise a million bucks, show me how are you going to use that $1 million, right? Yeah. If everything goes to hell and things take 6 months longer than you think it will, what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
How are you going to survive?
Yeah. Oh, managing the cash flow is the most important thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have this like little package that it's like 90 days to positive cash flow, because cash is everything, especially in the cannabis industry. You don't have a bank account, and like, you know, cash, I mean, hopefully you do, but cash flow management is so important, because you will see hiccups working in the cannabis space. Like if you are along the supply chain, you will see a delay in production, a delay in regulation, a delay in something. So you have to have some reserves.
It always, but for 95% of my clients, it takes longer than they think it will to get going, and it's mm-hmm. more expensive than they think it will.
Yeah.
And that's why you need to take that into account when you're building your projections. I always build, like, I'll do a 3-year projection with the first year projected by month, and I'll project an income statement and a cash flow statement.
Yeah.
And then you can play with the assumptions. You can say, what's a worst case scenario? What happens? What's the best case scenario? What happens? Helps give you some understanding of your business. And when you're talking to investors and they bring these things up, you'll be prepared to answer their questions.
Yeah, exactly. No, totally. And you have to be prepared. I think first, the hardest thing about getting investment is knowing an investor. The second is the pitch. And then, and to get to that pitch, you have to do a lot of work. And I think that also is the thing, is like, you can't pitch overnight.
Yeah. And one thing I would say on that, just in the concept of and the discussion of raising capital, is when it comes to a pitch deck, I've made a lot of pitch decks. I've seen thousands. You know, the best thing you can do is keep it simple. Less is more. People should be able to read your pitch deck in 5 minutes. The goal of a pitch deck is to get investors interested, so they want to talk to you more. The biggest issue I see with pitch decks is there's hundreds of words on 30 different slides. It would take you 2 hours to read the whole thing, and investors lose interest. It should be short and sweet. Explain the business, the problem, how are you solving it? Why is this an amazing opportunity? What's the market? What's the team? And then you can always build a second round pitch deck that has a lot more detail that you can provide later on. But just with the pitch deck, it's all about making sure the content is fine-tuned and a good story, and then make the design fit your brand and make sure it's professional.
Oh, excellent. Excellent pieces of advice. All right, are you ready for the speed round?
Sure.
All right. Where do you see yourself 1 year from today?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I joined Elo at the start of this year, so I'm about 7 months in now. So, you know, we've made a lot of great progress working with cannabis companies and raising money and valuations and M&A, and there's so much more work coming in, and there's just so much exciting stuff going on. You know, I'm excited to build out this team further, and you know, I really think at Elo, we have an amazing home that we've worked with a lot of good companies. I just see us building that out further, you know, really building support for this industry.
Oh, I love it. Cannabis futurism. What do you see the future of cannabis? Put yourself in 10 years from today.
So I think it'll go a few different routes. Obviously, when you say cannabis, there's going to be a medical side, and then there's more of, you know, the adult use recreational side.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people equate the wellness as being kind of the merging factor. Things like trouble sleeping and pain, you know, those aren't really recreational. They're not truly medical. So I think you will continue to see retail stores. Who knows if those will ever eventually merge with traditional pharmacies or anything like that. You'll really see the CPG side of the cannabis be built out, where it's targeted towards different demographics with different products focused on different types of people and problems. And then the medical side will go the true, more medical route, right? With FDA trials and pharmaceuticals, you know, they'll get more involved in that. You know, that intersection is a very interesting dynamic. Most people don't know the answer to until we know what's going to happen with, you know, rescheduling or descheduling if it goes to schedule two. You know, will it have to go through the FDA? You know, that's a very interesting dynamic when it comes to what's going to happen in the future that I don't think anyone knows. But certainly there's a lot of opportunity, and that doesn't even mention the hemp, right? There's thousands of uses for hemp. That's going to change every fabric of American society.
Oh my gosh, I'm excited. You know, you are definitely, you've done a ton. In 3 years of working in the cannabis space, you mentioned a lot of amazing companies. You know, you have a fantastic role with Ello. You work a lot, you know, you find balance in your life. What is your why?
You know, I think for me, it comes down to the industry. When you say why, it's like, why am I in the industry?
Yeah, like what, you know how you always talk about a company, what problem are you solving? Simon Sinek is like, well, it all starts with why. Like, what is your personal why of like, why do you get up every day? Like, why are you, you know, what are you, why are you doing this?
You know, I really think it's just because, you know, the cannabis industry is a once in a lifetime opportunity. I mean, it is just the most amazing plant on this planet that has so many amazing uses, you know, everything from enjoyment to, you know, pain to medicine to, you know, hemp has so many uses. I mean, it's remarkable that it's been illegal for so many years. So being able to be a part of this industry that we know is, has such an amazing future and stake in this world, and helping transform it, like that to me is like such a bigger why than like anything else personally.
Yes. Oh, Dan Nichols from Ello, thank you so much for joining. Before we get off the show, how can our listeners reach you?
Sure. Yeah. So you can reach me at Ello. You know, it's, I have an Ello email. You can go on our site and check us out. It's ellollc.com. Or you can reach me at dnichols with two L's at ellollc.com.
All right. Well, Dan, thank you so much for sharing all of your insight on Cannabis Business Minds.
Thank you for listening to today's show. This is your host, Simone Simaluka-Radzins of Calogia.com. I hope that you find this episode entertaining and insightful. My goal is to educate all of you about this exciting business because knowledge is power. If you haven't already, head on over to Calogia.com to connect with me and to meet other business leaders in the professional cannabis community. Also, if you like this, please go into iTunes and leave the Cannabis Business Minds podcast a five-star.